Welcome to the Liberty Advisor Show. One of the things that drives me absolutely nuts is anytime I have even the lightest criticism of Donald Trump, which usually, if he listened to me, would probably get himself out of a lot of trouble that he could be getting himself into in the future, is I inevitably get the, you know, well, where's Obama? Where were you, you know, pointing out all the things Obama was doing, you effing liberal, you stupid snowflake? Well, for those people, I would say I actually probably have done a lot more to expose Obama than any of them. And this was made in the run-up to the 2016 election in September, as we were getting ready for the biggest political defeat since the Democrat KKK-endorsed candidate lost on the 103rd ballot of the 1924 DNC. I just saw that actually on Wikipedia, and actually I couldn't even believe that, but apparently that was true. And obviously that was not the biggest one, but that was just one more thing that I wanted to point out. But this video is actually based on a meme. I know that's a weird thing to say, that you've got a video based on a meme, but the meme goes, in just 6 years, and it's a picture of Obama toasting, I nearly tripled the stock market, cut unemployment in half, ended two wars, cut the insured rate in half, brought gas down to $2.75, and cut the annual Bush deficit by two-thirds. Oh, and I got bin Laden. Or as Fox News says, I have failed as a president, right? Well, anyways, I've got the complete smackdown video of this, probably about 15, 20 minutes long, and I've got some other advertisements. And at the end, one way you guys can support the show is going to defeattheglobalist.com. Great, a lot of great freedom swag over there. Have, make taxation theft again, make America free again. We've got, Donald Trump as my president shirts to trigger all the liberals that are out there, and much, much more. Anyways, without further ado, we'll get started with the show. Thank you. So, I hate to admit it, but this meme triggers me. Every single time I see this, and every single time I see some variation of this, I get absolutely triggered. So now, I'm going to tear this apart piece by piece. Hope you guys...
Hey everyone, it's the Libertarian Advisor, and today I wanted to talk about one of the memes that's been going around for a while. It's the one where it discusses, you know, how great of a job Obama has done with, you know, the stock market, the unemployment rate, the deficit, gasoline prices, etc. There's lots of these memes. I'm sure you guys have seen them around. But really, it's too much to refute and, you know, post back to somebody, because there's just so much going on there. So really what I want to do is kind of take this apart piece by piece. So the first part I want to take apart is the fact about Obama tripling the stock market. I mean, every economist is going to tell you that there's very little the president can do while they're actually in office to improve the economy, but there's a whole heck of a lot they can do to make things worse, or to make things worse eventually down the road. I mean, it's true that Obama obviously inherited a complete train wreck from George Bush. And, you know, first off, I just want to mention that I can't stand George Bush. I'm not some George Bush fanboy. I think he should probably be in jail if it were up to me. So this is not any, this is not coming from a place where, you know, I'm only trying to, you know, protect people on the right and only go after those on the left. But the fact of the matter is, the left's in charge right now. The left's been in charge for the past 8 years. And obviously the media doesn't cover, you know, pretty much any of their malfeasance, and they do a great job covering the Republicans, as they should. But anyways, the first point I want to make is that it was actually Bill Clinton and all of his Goldman Sachs acolytes that are actually the ones who deregulated Wall Street. The name of that act was called the Glass-Steagall Act. And that actually is what separated the investment banking from retail banking. And it was Clinton and all of his Goldman Sachs cronies, like the Robert Rubins and Larry Summers and all that, whole tree of evilness, that they're the ones who got rid of that. And that was in 1999. So it's not like, you know, you get rid of this one day and then the next day, boom, crisis. But that's what set the tone for the ultimate crash that we had in 2008. And I won't even say that's the ultimate crash, because we did a lot of things to paper that over. And I think we still got some other things that have yet to come. But anyways, what has happened is, and why the market tripled, is you've got the Federal Reserve who printed, you know, over $4 trillion, the other central banks who printed trillions of dollars. And that money first goes to basically the richest people in the world. So the richest people in the world don't actually have to sell their stocks at a loss while you've got to, you know, sell your house, or you've got to, you know, consolidate, and you've got to, you know, squeeze the belt straps. Richest people in the world get to borrow money at 0.25, 0.5%. sometimes even free, basically, and then buy up all those assets when they're distressed. Now, you don't have to be a genius to, you know, look at the market when it's down to, you know, at the 6,000 level on the Dow, 7,000 on the Dow. I think it was like actually 6,600-ish. But anyways, you don't have to be a genius to then come in. And at that point, pretty much, you know, monkey throwing, you know, darts could do a, you know, a great job picking out stocks, because, you know, when you get all that money for free, it's going to the richest people in the world. They're then consolidating the entire economy. And that's something that really the left should abhor, because I think that the term, you know, left or progressive or liberal, it's, you know, not really used in the proper context. And I actually get along great with a lot of people that are actual liberals. It's, you know, kind of this fake, you know, authoritarian liberal that the media pushes is what I don't get along with. You know, kind of like the Hillary Clinton types, you know, they're more authoritarians. And, you know, I don't think there's anything liberal about her. There's nothing liberal about giving money to the richest people in the world so then that way they can buy up the stock market and consolidate the entire industry. I mean, there's even a Berkeley professor, I know, you know, ultra-right-wing Berkeley, Professor Emmanuel Saez, that said 95% of all the gains have gone to the 1%. And I'm not someone that's against capitalism or against people making money, but I know ultimately it's the 0.00001% that are the ones playing nations off against each other, like the George Soroses that are actually, you know, destroying things. I mean, could you even imagine the outcry there'd be if 95% of the gains underneath George Bush went to the 1%? I mean, we'd never hear the end of it. I mean, never hear the end of it. The other thing you've got going on is you've got the Bank of Japan is actually printing money out of thin air. Here, I'll make a little sound for you. Printing money out of thin air and then using that money to then buy up the stock market. So they have, you know, I think if you look at their version of the S&P 500, I think it's called the Nikkei 100. Japan, the Bank of Japan is the largest shareholder in almost all of those stocks. And at the rate they're going at, you know, pretty soon they're going to be buying up the entire stock market. And, you know, I think there's a word for that, and it's called fascism, when you have the state, or in this case, you know, using the, you know, Japan as the state, buying up the corporations. That's the state and corporate merger, which is known as fascism. I mean, the other thing that happens when you give away all this free money is you have corporations who are actually buying back their own shares. So what you have here is, and actually it gets a little bit worse. So they're actually, in many cases, they're actually issuing debt, then using that debt to then buy back their own shares. So I have illustrated an example here, and I'm going to have to read this, so just bear with me. So imagine company X has 1 million shares outstanding and earned $1 million of revenue. This would give company X an earnings per share of $1. Now imagine company X buys 300 shares of its stock, but its revenue has declined to $900,000. This would give a new earnings per share of $1.28. So in this case, company X is actually making less money, but all things being equal, they would actually have a higher stock price because now their earnings per share went up. So you're actually seeing companies with top line revenues coming down, but earnings per share going up because of some of these accounting gimmicks that are going on. And that's nothing to write home about or to take a victory lap on. And the real point of contention here is, if things are so great, then why are interest rates stuck at 0.25%? Why are you only able to raise them once? So I know the interest rate is actually 0.5. It's a range, 0.25 to 0.5. So let's call it 0.5. You know, if things are going great, you wouldn't have to do that. If things are going great, you could have a normal rate of, let's say, 3 or 4%. But you can't, because if you had a rate of 3 or 4%, the government would have to borrow at 5, and 5% of a debt that's almost $20 trillion is $1 trillion a year of interest. And at that point, it's game over, and no one's going to be laughing at that point. So, you know, when Trump comes out and talks about how Hillary's being helped out by the Fed not raising rates, I think he's absolutely true, and this is what I think he really means by that. All right, the second claim I want to refute is that Obama ended two wars. Now, I mean, I don't even know where to start with this one. I mean, you've got a Nobel Peace Prize winning president who, although he did take troops out of Afghanistan, he largely replaced those with contractors. So yes, it's true that the troop count went down, but then you also had, you know, a very large presence of contractors there. I think there's about 30,000 contractors there still. Now in Afghanistan, in Iraq, you've actually seen most of the contractors go back and a lot of troops, you know, being taken home. As a libertarian, you know, I don't want any wars, but I think the worst thing to do is to leave all of our heavy artillery, all of our ammo, all of our weapons, you know, at this base with these poorly trained Iraqi soldiers. So then that way, all the Wahhabists that we were funding first in Libya, then shipped them over to Turkey, through Turkey, went into Syria. they then went over to Iraq to go steal all those weapons. You know, I think that's the dumbest thing you could possibly do. So now we've got this, it's kind of like a Machiavellian type system where, you know, we wanted to get rid of Gaddafi. So, you know, through any means, we were actually funding, you know, guys with flying the Al-Qaeda flag in the Benghazi capital. And this is before, I was pointing out this stuff even before, you know, the whole, you know, Benghazi, you know, type incident, which there is a lot, you know, to be said there that is basically an illegal weapons transfer that was supposed to be going into, you know, from Libya into Turkey, then into Syria, but then that all went awry. Now, that's not the point of this this broadcast, but the point of this broadcast is that, you know, Obama is no, you know, anti-war, you know, progressive liberal. You know, he's a huge warmonger. He started wars in Libya. Then that wasn't enough for him. So after that became a failed state, he then had to go start another war in Syria, where, you know, the goal was to get rid of Assad at any means possible, even if that meant funding Al-Qaeda and then changing around the name to ISIS to then confuse everybody and then even calling them the JV team. And now they actually are a big threat. So, I mean, the claim that you've ended all the wars and are some, you know, peacenik is just absolutely ridiculous. The third claim I want to address is the fact that you've cut the uninsured rate in half. I mean, a lot of the ill effects of Obamacare we haven't even begun to even see yet. I mean, a lot of those are going to be in the next couple of years. I know personally, I had a plan that only cost $70 a month when I graduated, bought it on the private market, had a deductible of $1,200. Now, granted, now I'm married, but, you know, my premium is over $500 a month. So even if, you know, you factor in the, you know, the effects of, you know, now there's two people versus one, you know, let's call it $250 a month, you know, $250 a month is still a lot more than 70, and now my deductible is over $6,000 per person. And oh yeah, better yet, just found out that my silver plan isn't going to cover pregnancy, which is awesome when your wife is pregnant. So thank you, Obama. I really appreciate that. And the other fact I want to bring up is you've got, maybe people have insurance, but now they can't afford to use it because in the past, you know, people had, you know, $20, $30, $40 deductibles. Well, now you've got a deductible that's, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. You know, if you're like the average American that has, you know, less than $1,000 in savings, according to a recent MarketWatch article, then you're not going to be able to get preventative care. You're not going to be able to, you know, afford to go into, you know, get care. And I think the person that said it best was the chief architect of Obamacare, which is Jonathan Gruber, who, you know, basically said if it wasn't for the ignorance of the American voter, this would have never been able to pass.
Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. And, you know, it's the second best argument. Look, I wish Mark was right. We can make it all transparent. But I'd rather have this law than not. So it's kind of like his reporter story.
And this is over a lot of people's heads. But when you're paying for insurance and it's coming out of your payrolls, that's actually pre-tax. But now through Obamacare, it's not going to be coming from your employer. It's going to be coming more and more, you know, from you. So it's a secret tax. And then there's several videos of Jonathan Gruber actually, you know, bragging about this. But, you know, when you've got somebody like me that can see right through it, it's just, you know, really, you know, despicable what they're doing to the population that they know is not financially literate to understand what they're doing. And then I want to discuss, you know, how Obama brought the price of gas down. I mean, I think everything that has been done to bring the price of gas down, you know, has probably been attributed, you know, is it Obama that's opening up coal mines? Is it Obama that's, you know, trying to get offshore drilling going? You know, he's been stifling all of this. You know, you've got, you know, all these technologies that were supported by Republicans and now Occupy Democrats is trying to take, you know, a victory lap on. The other thing you had happen is you had a lot of people falsely believe that the U.S. was going to start raising rates, you know, in late 2014. The Fed gave such a, you know, rosy outlook on things. Everyone thought that the Fed funds rate was going to be probably 3% or 4% by now. Well, that never materialized. But what did materialize is the dollar soaring. So the dollar went up, I think it was like 40% against most basket of currencies. So, you know, if that wasn't the case, you know, probably the price of oil would probably be 40% higher because it takes, you know, when the value of the dollar goes up, and now it takes less of those dollars to buy goods. So, you know, I think that's one other issue you've got going on, but a lot of that is predicated on fraud. Now, the next point is going to be about how he cut the Bush deficit down by 2/3. And I do have another video on this that I can reference. So I'm not going to rehash that whole thing. But the main thing to keep in mind with that is that if you have to produce $10 of debt to get $1 of GDP, well, then what good is that doing? So you're seeing the debt going up like this, whereas the GDP is not even able to match that. And, we're bringing in record tax receipts. I think we have, more than $500 billion more than what Bush brought in. But yet we still have a deficit. So if you had the same amount of expenditures that Bush had, and then you had the same amount of revenues that we have currently, we'd have a massive surplus of probably about $500 billion-ish in that neighborhood. But instead, we've got a deficit of about $500 billion. So awesome job. Now, if we can't get a surplus in these types of conditions, 8 years into a recovery, then when are we going to expect to get that? I mean, the last point I want to address is that, Obama got Osama. I mean, there's almost so many slips in there, Freudian slips that you could give in that one. But I mean, you've got Nobel, Pulitzer Prize winning winners such as Cy Hirsch coming out and saying that that's pretty much a fable. You got guys like Dr. Steve Pachenik, who the Tom Clancy books were based off of him. He is Jack Ryan. So, I mean, you've got, all these different people that are coming out and saying that, he was already dead. But even if he wasn't, I think that the SEAL team really went in there. I think they really did kill some people. But, it's interesting that, they were all blown up the next month in a helicopter accident in Afghanistan. I mean, that's on record. You can go and Google, check that out. But even if all that's true, I mean, we've had, trillions of dollars of our treasure spent. We've had, thousands of, people lost in 9/11, thousands of people lost fighting the wars to ultimately try to get Osama. Sorry, I almost said Obama, but you had, thousands of people trying to, win this war to, maybe make America great again. And so after spending all this money, after losing all these lives, we go and we get the guy and then we go and dump him in the ocean immediately. I mean, that just seems kind of crazy to me. But anyways, again, was it your tactics that led to him getting captured? Were you the one in there? Were you the one, wargaming things out, exactly what they should do? No, stop trying to take credit for what, our brave soldiers did, whether or not, the official story is true or not. I mean, I'm usually defaulting to the fact that whatever the government tells me is not going to be true. But, that's just some of the, memes. That's just some of the, rebuttals that I have to give for that meme. Again, it took me 15 minutes to do this. And every time I see one of my friends, post that, it just absolutely drives me nuts. And now I've got a video that I can show them. And maybe now you've got a video that you can show them too. Thank you for watching. And if you like this, please like my page. And I appreciate it. Take care. Bye.
So I filmed this 2 years ago, but I forgot to add on the part of the claim that Obama cut the deficit by 2/3. So here's a part that I filmed this 2 years ago as well. And I don't know if I've ever even released either one of these. It may have been put out once on Facebook. But anyways, I hope you guys enjoy and thank you.
Hey, so today I want to talk about the claim about how Obama cut the Bush deficits by 2/3. While it is true that the deficit did go down by 2/3 underneath Obama, there's actually a lot more than meets the eye. So right now I'm on the FRED website, which is the Federal Reserve Economic Data website. There's actually a lot of tools to use here, and you can customize things, a different wide variety way of things. So I've got two different charts pulled up here. One is the federal surplus and deficit. So as you can see, when Clinton was leaving office, we still had a surplus, although there's a lot more to meet the eye with that. But you had 9/11 happening, the tech bubble crashing, which took those surpluses and put it down into deficits. You also had, a lot of excess that was built up by the Fed under Greenspan lowering rates for the first time. So as you can see here, nothing too great to write home about. But a lot of the Bush years, were in the $300 billion deficit range, $170 billion deficit range, all the way down to the recession, the peak of it being at $1.2 trillion, although that was underneath Obama, although you can't really fault him with that, although he did lobby the housing industry to lower their standards as a senator from Illinois, and even, I believe he sued Citigroup. I know he sued a major bank, forcing them to lend subprime. He was also, I think, top three recipient of lobbyist money from the, the big mortgage companies. So, like the Freddie Mae, Fannie Mae, Countrywide's,
But anyways, moving on. So as you can see, you know, the deficit underneath Obama has gotten less and less, but, you know, you're still at, you know, a trillion, you know, almost a trillion, you know. And then here's where it starts getting good. In 2013, you're looking at, you know, $460 billion, you know, $400 billion, you know, $390 billion. So, you know, definitely some manageable numbers. But what I want to also then pan over is I want to look at the federal government current tax receipts. So at the height of the Bush years, you're only looking at $1.6 trillion of tax receipts. And in the depths of the depression, you're only looking, sorry, recession, you're looking at $1.1 trillion of receipts. But what's interesting to know is that, you know, once you get up to, you know, 2012-ish area, you're actually starting to surpass where Bush was in 2007 from current tax receipts. And mind you, Bush, you know, wasn't, you know, super far in the hole. You're looking at maybe $200 billion-ish of deficits, which by today's standards seem great. So as you're looking at this, 2014, you know, we're already over, you know, $300 billion more than where Bush was in tax receipts, which is a good thing. And then, you know, over in 2015, you know, we're, you know, quite a bit a ways from where Bush was. So Bush was over here at $1.6 trillion. Now we're sitting at $2.1 trillion. That's a half a billion dollars more of tax receipts. So when we're looking at things, is we should look at this. So imagine if we add an extra half a billion dollars of tax receipts in 2006, we would be plus sitting and swimming in the money. You know, same over here, swimming in the money. You know, during the entire Bush era, if we had an extra $500 billion, we would definitely be in the black. But now, you know, it's going to take another half billion on top of already record surpluses just to get back to even. And that's with a recovery, if you want to call it that, that's lasted, you know, we're going on 8 years now. You know, I think in 10 days will actually be the anniversary of Lehman collapsing on September 15th, 2008. So, you know, to take a victory lap on cutting the deficit, you know, is to ignore the fact that we spent a ton of money. We've, you know, increased the national unfunded liabilities by, you know, untold trillions. We've increased the national debt by a factor of two. And what do we have to show for it? I mean, we have an infrastructure that's still crumbling. We have a labor force participation rate that's at nearly 40-year lows, with I think only 62%-ish of people actually in the workforce. You've got, you know, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders rising, you know, to the forefront politically. And that's not because things are going great. That's because things are not going great. Otherwise, that would not be the case. So this is just some of the, you know, Fred data I wanted to show with you guys to actually show that, you know, debt and deficit is, you know, there's a lot more than meets the eye. And I think it should be factored in that, you know, we are collecting more money now, but the deficits are still gigantic. And how are we ever going to close that gap? I mean, if anyone really wants to go get depressed, they can go to usdebtclock.org and then see a whole host of different debt measurements that are not great. I think the most telling one down here is liability per taxpayer is $864,000. Now, because when you factor in the debt, it doesn't include Social Security. It doesn't include Medicare, which is actually more than Social Security. It doesn't include a lot of other unfunded liabilities that we have. So when we take a look at what the national debt is, you know, hovering around $19 trillion, I think this is just out of focus over here. So, yeah, we're looking at $19.5 trillion as of this writing. You know, that doesn't really show the entire picture, because if you don't count Social Security, you don't count Medicare, you don't count the wars, you don't count unfunded Obamacare, you know, and so many other things, then what are you really counting? It's like if I was trying to, you know, do a financial plan and said, oh yeah, you're doing great, but if you don't count your mortgage, don't count student loans, don't count your credit cards, well, guess what? This is the real world, and in the real world, you need to count those things. So I think anyone who's doing a victory lap on Obama is definitely doing a premature victory lap. And if things are going so great, then how come we can't raise the Fed funds rate? That's all I have to say for today.
Thank you for watching our latest video or listening to our latest podcast. Now, a lot of people are probably finding out about me for the very first time, and I take full responsibility for not doing a good enough job marketing myself, if that is the case. In any event, the Liberty Advisor podcast is meant to be informative with evergreen content and not just a show complaining about what's currently going on. If this is a podcast that you've only recently discovered, we'd like to invite you to check out some of our past episodes. And for some more background, the months leading up to the election, I was really mad at the Libertarian Party. Basically, they were acting like socialists. You had Bill Weld talking about gun control. And at that point, I just completely lost it and decided, you know what? I'm done representing the Libertarian Party. What I'm going to do now is try to have libertarians vote for Trump. And there is, you know, a lot of good things that Trump did do that I thought he was going to, but I didn't think it'd be the end all be all that all of a sudden now we've elected Trump and, all our problems are solved. But some of the other things I did was, you know, I helped popularize the term fake news, probably was one of the first, if not the first. I have not seen someone who had the list before me. What we did is I had a list called Fake News List that ended up going viral. And not saying I'm the first person to ever string those two words together, but I did think that I was probably the first person to appropriate that term from the left and at least have it go viral. But with Trump winning, I didn't think that all of a sudden, it'd be a new day for America. You know, he did a lot of good things, such as, getting us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. And we had all the different, basically prevented, World War III with Russia, or at least we helped postpone that. Obviously, Hillary didn't get in, another good benefit. Now we're seeing drawdowns in the war on Syria, which, Obama told us was not going to be a war. Same thing with Afghanistan as well. We get to at least keep the Second Amendment for a little while longer, although there was a bump stock ban that I was not a big fan of. And, just a ton of other things that are positives, especially, the culture of now knowing about fake news and not trusting the media. So, I don't want to, rain on this parade and make it sound like there's nothing good that's been done. But if there was, 999 promises that were kept and out of 1,000, and the one thing that wasn't done was reining in the Fed or ending the Fed or, shining light on the Fed. And right now, yeah, he is shining some light on the Fed, but the light is, hey, how come you're not, keeping the bubble going for me too, instead of pointing out that the Fed shouldn't even exist in the first place. But, that's really enough about that. And what I want to get into is I had a presentation at the Arizona Breakfast Club called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And really the entire premise of that is that Donald Trump coming in would be good news, at least for all the people sitting on the sidelines. And now you'd probably see the market go up. But what would happen, especially from like the repatriation of money and the tax cut, is that companies would bring their money back here. They'd buy back their own stock. That would temporarily, and again, it's important to note, this would temporarily make the stock market go up. And what I want to do is have my clients win at the end of the game. Doesn't matter who's winning in the third quarter. Doesn't matter. It only matters who's winning at the end of the game. So what I thought that the premise would be that all this good news would now lead to the Fed not having the excuse to not raise rates, which would then lead to bad news with the rates going up. And we've got more on this a little bit later on. But again, this was something where you guys can go back to this episode 12, I believe. And I messed up some numbering in the beginning. So actually, I don't have an episode 13. I figure, hey, if you're going to be off by one episode, 13 is probably a lucky one to leave out. Again, that was recorded from an audio camera, so not the best audio quality. Episode 10, we have an interview with Doug Casey and Ernest Hancock on Ernest Hancock Show. And I ended up getting Doug, scheduled him, and figured, hey, I'd kill two birds in one stone. Great place to find out about the global economic slowdown. Episode 16 gets into, and I'm trying to find it over here, gets into, let's just try to keep finding it over here. I got to scroll down. Here we go. It's called Why America's Pension System Will Fail. The title is pretty self-explanatory, but I also get into one of the biggest risk investors face, which is sequence of return risk, and how that plays into an impending pension collapse. Highly recommend that one. We've got episode 18, which is Tim Predicts the Vol Cost. Trying to find it. There we go, right there. And on this episode of the Ernest Hancock Show, I said the worst thing someone could do. And again, the Dow was at almost 27,000. And what it was, the day or two before the high. And then we just recently hit a high again in late September that pretty much got just like a tiny, tiny bit over that, over where we were back in January. So the worst thing an investor can do would be short the volatility index, which in layman's terms means you're betting that the amount of volatility in the stock market would go down, and it was already at an all-time low. I thought it was the dumbest thing you could possibly do. I said it on air. 2 weeks later, that volatility index completely blew up. A lot of people were borrowing money. They were on leverage, and there was at least I know of one fund that went completely belly up. All the investors lost all their money in that fund, and there were several more that were down, well over 80, 90%. And this was something I saw coming a mile away, or ended up being 2 weeks away. Episode 19, Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live interviewed me at Anarchapoco. He's also the guy that told Roger Ver, who's also known as Bitcoin Jesus, about Bitcoin. And I'm going to play a little bit from that recording because you guys can see that this was taken in February live at Anarchapoco. And I was just so spot on everything back then. And it's my fault that you guys don't know about me and weren't able to protect your portfolios ahead of time. And so I want to, figure it's better late than never. And here we are, going to play a little clip of that.
Document of ongoing financial collapse as it occurs.
So the financial collapse. Now let's talk a little bit about that, and then we can talk about you and what your path and journey has been so far to liberty. So what kind of collapse are we talking about here? Are we talking about the collapse of the U.S. dollar?
I think ultimately it leads to the collapse of the U.S. dollar, because right now the Federal Reserve is in a rock and a hard place. That's of their own doing, so I don't feel sorry for them at all. But there's really three things they're trying to save. They're trying to save the stock market, the bond market, and the dollar. The real biggie right now is the bond market, because you've seen, if we're able to pay attention, the interest rates just the past 2 months have shot up dramatically. So they've gone from about 2.4% to about 2.8%, which might not sound like a lot, but when you have over $100 trillion of unfunded obligations, just imagine what that does to the interest payments. And so the Federal Reserve right now is in this pickle right now where... And again, this is something that I was documenting about 13 months ago. I gave a presentation on Ernie's show called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And the premise is, and I'm doing this in little air quotes right now, but we've got so much good news, and again, in air quotes, good news, in terms of inflation being above 2%, the job numbers, we know they're rigged, but they're supposedly low. So the Fed is losing cover to not raise rates. So during the 8 years of Obama, it was a constant flow of bad news. So the Fed kept kicking the can down the road. They kept getting excuses to not raise rates. Well, now, Trump the other day tweeted out, I don't understand why there's so much good news, yet the stock market goes down like there's bad news. I'm like, well, you should have listened to the presentation 13 months ago, because the real enchilada is not the stock market. It's the bond market. Because when the rates go up, whether it's the market dictating the rates.
Now, that was only a very, very small smattering of the many great calls and many great episodes that we've had in the past. So really appreciate if you guys head over to libertyadvisor.com, click in the upper right-hand corner, still labeled as podcast, but depending on when you're looking at this, it may have changed over to being labeled show. We've got the Crypto Wealth Show, which is obviously focused on crypto. Then we've got the Liberty Advisor Show, which is focused on everything that isn't related to crypto. But anyways, thank you. Head over to thelibertyadvisor.com, and thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the show. One of the ways you can help support the show is by seeing if it makes sense to invest with myself. I'm a certified financial planner with Innovative Advisory Group, LLC. Innovative specializes in self-directed IRAs where you can invest into virtually anything, including virtual assets and cryptocurrencies inside your retirement accounts. And get this, you can actually hold on to the private key. And that's something that nobody else is doing, at least with the help of an advisor. We also run protective growth portfolios where you invest a small amount of your portfolio into put options, and while the rest, and that basically helps protect the rest of the portfolio. Not very many people are familiar with put options, but a lot of people are familiar with homeowners insurance, and it works in a very similar fashion. So essentially what you're doing is using a very, very small percentage of the value of the home to protect the rest of the home. And if the house doesn't burn down or there isn't a major catastrophe, then you're basically out on the cost of the insurance. Flip side on, if your house ends up burning down, well, then you build your house back. And that's really the same thing that's going on here. So if the market ends up tanking, and we know the most that you can possibly lose on your investment, and honestly, if the market were to go down 60, 70%, and you're only down single digits potentially, then that's an amazing buying opportunity. Lord Nathan Rothschild said it best, that the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. But if your money goes down with everybody else's, then you're not able to take advantage of the next crisis. And also, if you're just camping out in cash or in bonds, making next to nothing, you could be going broke safely for a very long time. And then you've got to know when to time the market. And that's something that basically nobody can do. Now, on the flip side, if I'm wrong in all this and the market keeps going higher, or the Federal Reserve comes out, or the European Central Bank comes out and says, hey, we're going to print
whole bunch more money and the market goes to infinity, well, then you'll go up to infinity minus the cost of that put option. So I think that this is a great strategy that you definitely want to learn more about. I mean, just given the craziness that's going on right now, I mean, if you're heavy into cash right now, heavy into bonds, or even heavy into stocks, especially if you're close to actually needing those funds for retirement or just needing those funds in general, maybe for a big project, or maybe you work on a crypto and you raised a whole bunch of money, that this is something that we can help protect yourself and protect your loved ones. And there's nothing you have to lose by scheduling a free consultation with us. And actually, there's a chance you could lose a lot by not talking with us in general. If you go and click on our website in the upper right-hand corner, there's a Work with Tim button up there. You can see all of our plans, ways we work with our clients, pricing can all be found there. And given that I'm sort of out there on a lot of different political issues, I know that I'm not going to be for everybody. You know, that's sort of my way of qualifying you, not the other way around. But, you know, I'm fine. I'm not trying to have all six billion people out there like me. And I'm here to really, at the end of the day, to tell the truth and to make money, not necessarily make friends. So head over to thelibertyadvisor.com and let's see what we can do for you. Thank you.